Failure is something that I actually really embrace and look forward to because it means I get to innovate. It means that all those little gray cells in my head get to start spinning and creating something new.
Welcome to Midlife Mixtape, the podcast. I'm Nancy Davis Coe, and we're here to talk about the years between being hip and breaking one.
Where do I belong? Tell me why I'm here and what's taking this long. When can I move on?
I want to take a moment before today's episode to tell you about a brand new book I just read that's one of the latest entries in the long-running 33 and a Third book series from Bloomsbury. If you aren't familiar with 33 and a Third, each volume in the series is written by a different writer and focuses on just one album. And I just ripped through one of the latest entries on Duran Duran's 1982 album, Rio. And I know all the Duran Duran ladies are screaming right now. The book was written by Annie Zaleski, the award-winning music writer whose work has appeared in Rolling Stone, NPR Music, Stereo Gum, Time, and more. Now, of course, I owned Rio, Duran Duran's big breakthrough album, back in 1982, and I know some Midlife Mixtape listeners are big Duran Duran stans from way back, but I can't say that I had listened to Rio all the way through during this century. And then after reading Annie's nuanced and comprehensive take on the album, I've been listening to it nonstop. The book details how Rio wasn't a success everywhere at first. In fact, that LP had to be remixed and reissued before it found an audience in America. However, thanks to a combination of colorful music videos, which established Duran Duran as leaders of an MTV-driven second British invasion, as well as incredibly hard work and good timing, Rio established Duran Duran as one of the most innovative and beloved pop rock bands of the 80s. And the 33 and a Third book on Rio really opened my eyes to how seminal their music was for the band and, of course, for the never-ending evolution of pop rock music. It's available now via Bloomsbury, and you can also order it wherever you order your books. Go to your local bookseller and ask them to get you 33 and a Third's latest on Rio. Hello and welcome to episode 99 of the Midlife Mixtape Podcast, or as Nina might sing, 99 podcast episodes. I'm very glad to be spending some time with you today. It's almost as good as calling you from a wall phone in the kitchen with a long curly cord that stretched into a closet so you could talk in peace. So, if you understand simple math, you must know that the next episode is 100. 100! I can't believe I made 100 podcast episodes. I obviously have to do something special for this centennial episode because in addition to reaching triple digits, there have been a couple of other milestones in the past 4 weeks. I hit 4 years of the Midlife Mixtape podcast. I hit 10 years of blogging at midlifemixtape.com. And there have been over 200,000 downloads of this show. And if that doesn't call for a party, I don't know what does, especially because all of us at this point in 2021 have earned the right to celebrate any and every success, including finding a good parking spot at the grocery store. So in that spirit, episode 100 is going to be a party where I turn the interviewer's seat over to you for a change. Ask me anything. Send me your questions about midlife, music, podcasting, gratitude, Oakland, Rochester, writing, reading, Netflix. I can talk about Outlander and Stars, whatever you want to ask. And please understand that I'm not doing this in the spirit of I'm so interesting, everybody should know about me, but rather the fact that I've been asking you questions for the past 100 episodes, like your summer jobs and your first concerts and your pandemic grief and gratitude. And it's a little rude, I think, to not give you a chance to ask me questions. I hope that's how you will take it. It feels a little weird to say, like, hey, let me talk for a whole episode, but I hope you'll take it in the spirit that's intended, which is just like, I want to do my part in the two-way conversation. And if you send in a question, you will be entered to win one of three Midlife Mixtape 100th episode party packs. Pack one is going to be a bundle of books from past guests, including but not limited to The Chicken Sisters by KJ Delantonia, Why We Can't Sleep by Ada Calhoun, and I Miss You When I Blink by Mary Laura Philpott. That's pack one. Pack two is a bundle of my favorite music-themed books, including but not limited to All I Ever Wanted by future Rock Hall of Famer Kathy Valentine of the Go-Go's. Finally, they're going in. I want to throw in Good Booty by Ann Powers, amazing book, and On Bowie by my favorite music writer, Rob Sheffield. And pack three is going to be a thank you project bundle. So I'll sign a copy of my book. I'll throw some other stuff in there too. I've got stuff around. It'll be interesting. So send me your questions to dj@midlifemixtape.com or drop them into social media on Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram. If you're particularly interested in any one of those prize packs I just described, mention that too, and I'll try to make it happen. I'll pick winners at random to be announced during the 100th episode. So join me for the party on June 22nd. When I asked a few weeks ago what listeners would do if they had a midlife gap year, the most frequent response I got was travel. Well, today's guest, Michelle Fishburn, took a year off to do just that, and it's quite a story. Michelle moved into her motorhome in September 2020 and set off on a 12,000-mile road trip all over America, interviewing hundreds of people about their lives during the pandemic. Her project, called Who We Are Now, is being turned into a book that will be published by UNC Press next year. Prior to launching Who We Are Now, Michelle was a public relations and partnership director for national nonprofits, a homeschool teacher, a newspaper columnist, and an international corporate attorney. So buckle up, kids, and let's get on the road with Michelle Fishburn. Welcome to the Midlife Mixtape Podcast, Michelle Fishburn. How are you today?
I'm doing fine, Nancy. Thank you for having me on.
Are you actually calling from an RV right now?
Yes, as a matter of fact, I am sitting in my 2006 motorhome that I've been living in ever since August.
Oh my gosh. Okay, well, I can't wait to hear all about it, but there's a different question that we start this show with every time, and that is, what was your first concert, Michelle, and what were the circumstances?
I believe my first concert was February 10th, 1984.
Holy moly, that's a level of specificity I never get. Okay, go on.
Well, I was trying to figure out what the first one was, and so to be honest with you, I thought my first one was Boston. But I went and I looked back at their concert history and I'm like, Michelle, I don't think that was your first one. So I went back into the Police concert history. And sure enough, Greensboro Coliseum with my boyfriend from UNC because I was in college, February 10th. And it was the Police and the Reflex opened for them.
I don't remember. I feel like I remember the Reflex, but I'm only thinking of the Duran Duran song, which is not a band so much as a song. How was the show?
It was great. We were up in the rafters and it was pretty awesome. Sting's amazing, obviously.
You must be a connoisseur of the road mix, the playlist that you have to have on when you're driving. Do you have one for your, is it offensive if I say RV versus motorhome?
Is no. A motorhome is a type of RV.
Okay.
Nancy, this is going to surprise you. It shocks most people. I do not listen to anything when I'm driving. So I drove 12,000 miles all over the United States without an audiobook, without music of any type. Yeah. And people are really surprised. Earlier in my life, when I was in my 20s and 30s, I always listened to music when I was going down the road, whether it's to work or whatever. But then my kids, when they got into their teenage years and I was homeschooling, they would have fights over whose music got to be played. And so I said, okay, great. We're just traveling in silence now. And then, I road schooled them all over the United States for 10 months once and then 4 months again. So I guess I just got used to driving in silence.
I could never do that. And in fact, it's one of the big outcomes of the pandemic is I realized how much of my music consumption came while I was driving around. And of course, I wasn't going anywhere for 14 months. And it's been, I've noticed the drop off in terms of just time to listen to music. So I'm looking forward to getting back on the road. My husband and I are planning a big 14-hour road trip in July, and I'm already thinking, what will we listen to? So I bow down to your ability to stay awake and keep moving, but obviously you had a lot compelling you. So let's dive right in. You just mentioned you spent the last year plus covering 12,000 miles in your RV, capturing the stories of real life from all over America and sharing them on your site, Who We Are Now. Can you talk about the changes that happened to you between January 2020 and August 2020 that kind of lined you up for this trip?
Sure. At the beginning of January 2020, I had an awesome job as a national PR director, public relations director, partnership director for a nonprofit foundation. And I loved my job and I got to fly all over the United States meeting with really interesting people and organizations about leveraging our message. Mm-hmm. And I had some really cool things planned at the U.S. Senate, the U.S. House of Representatives, even was working on something with an A-lister that I don't want to drop names, but he's amazing. And then the pandemic happened.
You got to drop the name, just like a clue to the name.
Sure, sure. So the nonprofit is called Inmates to Entrepreneurs, and it's about giving people a second chance. Truly a second chance, because sometimes they can't get jobs as ex-felons. And so they start their own businesses. And John Legend, as a matter of fact, has an accelerator that he supports helping give business owners a second chance who serve time in prison. And so I was working with John Legend's people on a joint event going into a prison with our founder, Brian Hamilton, while John was on tour, and they were going to be talking with the prisoners about entrepreneurship. So that was really exciting. So I had a great job. But then when the pandemic hit, Brian said to me, Michelle, you know, I can't do any of the national events you're lining up. And so I'm going to have to lay you off.
Great. So that came, that was early 2020. And I know a lot of, I know some listeners have had some similar challenges in the past year, so it's relatable. What else happened?
Well, and I thought, oh, no problem. And I thought, oh, I can network my way to the next job. And of course, that wasn't possible. I was supposed to go to South By. It would be in my sixth time there. And I thought, I'll just pick up a job at South By. Well, South By obviously didn't help. So fast forward to the middle of July, 86 customized cover letters later, I still did not have a job, not even interviews. And my youngest was going off to college, and the lease on my post-divorce house was up on July 31st.
And so you thought, well, I know what I'll do. I'll hop in an RV. Take me back to the moment when you were facing all of those changes and adversity, and the answer popped into your head that you needed to get on the road.
I was in a parking lot at Target around July 15th, and I thought, Michelle, you have to tell the movers where they're moving your stuff to. It was really that basic a question. Like, time is running out, guy. So is it going into storage, or are you going to rent someplace or buy someplace?
And where were you based at the time? Where were you living?
Chapel Hill, North Carolina.
Okay.
And so I thought, well, you'd be a fool to put roots down anywhere because you have no idea where this next job is coming from. And I thought, well, thank gosh, I have my 2006 motorhome, and I know how to live in it for an extended period of time because I've done it before. So I'll just, okay, I'll move into the motorhome. And then I thought, well, should I sit by the seashore and try to consult my way to the next job? And I didn't hyperventilate, but I kind of hyperventilated in my mind and thought, that sounds awful, because I would feel so scared that it wasn't going to work. And so then all of a sudden, out of the blue, truly like a lightning strike, Humans of New York came to mind. Are you familiar with Humans of New York?
I sure am. And I was going to ask you about Parallels, so I'm glad you brought it up.
Okay. So I thought, wait a minute, I'll do Humans of the United States during a pandemic. Boom. I'll get in my motorhome. I'll drive all over the United States interviewing people about their lives during the pandemic. And I can drive from here to Yellowstone with my eyes closed, although that wouldn't be safe for anybody on the road. To me, going to Yellowstone from North Carolina is like driving to the grocery store. I've done it so many times. It's not a big deal. And I thought, I'll just drive out to Yellowstone and back. No problem. I know how to do that. And so and I thought, well, this will be a portfolio project, and I'll show people, look, I created this from A to Z, got it on social media, got media hits, I have a website. So hire me. So the goal was to have a job by January.
So you didn't really go into it thinking this is going to be an avocation that I can turn into a book, that I can turn into a movement. You thought it was how you were going to get your next job.
Exactly.
Did you truly just think, this is what I'm going to do, no problem, and here I go? Or did you have any kind of internal resistance? And I'm also going to ask you about external resistance, because I wondered what your family and friends think. But let's start with internal resistance.
Zero internal resistance. If somebody said to me that I had to go park the motorhome by a gorgeous place at the beach, that's where I would have had the internal resistance. That's what sounded scary to me.
Well, and you had done it before, yeah. So that must have made it easier. But what did your friends and family think when you said, hey, guys, I'm moving everything into a storage unit and hitting the road?
My grandfather, in 1936, when he lost his job, he bought a trailer, and he and my grandmother lived in it for 3 years. I even have a newspaper clipping of the two of them pouring tea in their kitchen. And they enjoyed it so much that they were kind of, you know, a little bit disappointed to have to move back into a house. Mm-hmm. And then my parents, when my dad got sick of playing golf in the country club retirement community that they were in, they hit the road in 2002 and lived in their motorhome for 7 years.
Wow. So it was in the family for sure.
Oh, yeah. We've got an RV gene, I guess. Nice. So my mom and dad were like, oh, my God, this is going to be the best time of your life. And my oldest daughter said, Mom, that's so cool. And my youngest daughter said, well, when I come home for Christmas, where's home?
And what was your answer?
I'll figure that out.
And what was it?
I rented a house in Chapel Hill for a month over Christmas so that we could have some sense of normalcy. Mm-hmm.
Now, you weren't totally alone in the motorhome, right? Is there a canine companion who I've noticed in your Instagram posts with crazy eyes?
Buddy does have crazy eyes.
Buddy looks like he would cut you if he didn't like the way you were feeding him a treat. But he's a little cute furball.
He's a little cute furball. His name is Buddy, obviously. I just said it. He's a Shih Tzu. And then the interesting thing is, as I was traveling all over the United States driving, one of my friends said, oh, Travels with Charlie. And I said, what are you talking about?
Oh, great John Steinbeck book.
Right. In 1960, John Steinbeck had the same question. Who are we now? So he went ahead and got a camper, got his dog, Charlie, which is a standard poodle. He drove 10,000 miles over the United States. I drove 12,000. And so, yes, John had Charlie and I had Buddy, but Steinbeck had bars and I did not. He could go into a bar and strike up a conversation and get to know about the people.
Okay, honestly, as a music fan, I was standing here thinking, John Steinbeck could rap? I didn't know that because that's news to me. Yes, he did go into bar. That was, I remember reading that book in high school and thinking, who's this writer? I love him. So I had not, I didn't think that book was my entree into John Steinbeck's great body of work. So.
Oh, wow.
And Buddy, he's a good companion. Like, is he a watchdog? Is he just somebody there to snuggle with? I'm sure that's delightful.
He's a slug. He literally doesn't like to walk.
Okay, well, he doesn't need to. He's driving. You mentioned Humans of New York, which if you've been under a rock, you may not know this storytelling project that's mostly on Instagram and Facebook, but it's been turned into a wonderful book. And just this interviewer / photographer who goes out and finds these amazing stories that are so specific and through the specifics become so universal. Was storytelling always kind of the goal with what you thought was going to be your job getting project? I mean, did you realize at some point, like, oh my gosh, these stories deserve to be a project of their own?
Well, I didn't realize it. Other people realized it. As somebody who has done public relations for invention education and entrepreneurship education nonprofits for the past 6, 7 or so years, my favorite part of my job was telling the stories of the kindergartner through, you know, high schooler who came up with an invention because their aunt couldn't do something anymore, or the kid across the block was challenged physically. And so I fell into storytelling when my own daughter, when she was 12, came up with an invention. So I've been doing the storytelling and really loved it. So I knew that I enjoyed hearing about other people's experiences. And there's something called Otter. It's a transcription app.
That's what I use to do the transcription for this podcast.
So all I do is I tell the person, all right, when you talk to me, I'm just going to turn on this transcription app, and it's on my phone. I just put it down and the person starts to talk and it changes their words into a transcript. And so it's very unobtrusive. So as I'm listening to the person, I think they completely forget that they're being recorded. And mm-hmm. There's only one question in the interviews. And when I ask that one question, people end up talking for 20, 35, 40 minutes, and then they breathe.
And will you tell us what the question is?
Of course. It's January 1st, 2020. And then usually I pause because the person's eyes either go wide open or they look down or they smile. Like there's some emotion that comes with, gosh, can I get my head back to that time? Mm-hmm. So it's January 1st, 2020. What was your 2020 supposed to be like? And what did it end up being like through to the present?
Wow. That's a powerful question. We did a end of year episode on this show where I asked listeners to share a grief and a gratitude for 2020 that kind of taps into a similar vein. There's so much there. How did you find people to share their stories? When you go to the whoweareNow.us website, you'll see such a wide variety of people of every variation. So how did you find the people who you wanted to interview? And did you have to convince anyone to share their stories, or were they all eager to start talking?
So in the beginning, I just leaned on friends to tell me people they knew who they thought might have an interesting story. I also looked around my own community. So when I was getting my legs underneath me, it was basically a 1 degree or 2 degree of separation project. But then when I got into the motorhome, oh my God, I crashed and burned.
Not literally.
No, not literally. Right. So I got out there and I had no idea how I was going to meet people. I originally thought, okay, well, editors of papers and reporters and radio hosts know their communities. And I thought I would reach out to those people, say, hey, would you meet with me? But that had very minimal success. And so as I headed out on September 11th, I know weird day to start, but that's where I was, when I started, I really crashed and burned through the first couple of states. And when I stayed at campgrounds, I asked people, they're like, no, thanks.
No, thanks. Crazy lady with your crazy dog.
Right. No, thanks. God, dog has the big eyes. No, stay away. And then I started to think, okay, maybe organizations like an art museum, the educators, they can't educate. The kids can't come. How did they pivot? And so by and by, I slowly started to get a little bit better at it, but I was pretty terrible at it until I got out to Wyoming, believe it or not. So I had gone all the way out to Wyoming by the time I realized that Facebook was what I needed. Mm-hmm. And what I would do is I'd say, okay, I'm driving from A to Z, from here to Topeka or whatever, on this next trip, this next 3 or 4 hour trip. Is there a town on the way that's about the right size where maybe if I went into Facebook, I would see some, you know, organizations or the local newspaper putting stuff out about what's happening in their community. And that is the way I found out about the Kite Festival in Pine Bluffs, Wyoming. Mm-hmm. And so when I showed up in Pine Bluffs, Wyoming, which is a town of about 900 people, the woman said, why'd you come here? And I said, because of the Kite Festival. And she said, it was just a Kite Festival, Michelle. And I said, you have no idea how much the people on the East Coast would give right now for a Kite Festival. But she was a connector. So that was so the first piece was Facebook. Then the second piece is when you find a connector in a community, they say, oh, well, while you're here, you should talk to so-and-so.
So you had to get good at finding out who those connectors were. That was the first thing, huh?
I never got good at it. You don't know that you've run into a connector until it happens.
So I want to underline this for people listening, because oftentimes in midlife, we are scared to try something new. We've been doing something for 20 years and we're good at it. And starting off again as a rank beginner who's going to make mistakes is a scary feeling. And I just want to, and I talk about this all the time about how I cannot go back and listen to my first podcast episodes because I was just getting started. I was probably making so many mistakes. I don't want to know. Don't tell me if it's true. But if you don't get started, you can't improve. And that's totally what you experienced in your journey. And it took you till Wyoming till you kind of knew what was happening. But if you hadn't gotten in the car in North Carolina, you never would have gotten to Wyoming.
Oh, I've got so many ways to respond to that. Number one, when I was in Wyoming, I had no idea what was happening yet. Number two, a friend over Facebook this summer said, you know, Michelle, I'm sure your dad told you this all the time, but anything worth doing is worth doing badly. Mm-hmm. Now, that is not how my dad brought me up. He's helped save the astronauts on Apollo 13. His view was anything worth doing is doing right the first time. But I started thinking about what she said. And I'm like, you're right. And that goes to your point about the podcast. So that gave me some grace. And then another thing that was fresh in my mind and made things a lot less scary is, number one, the story of the old farmer, which I'll tell in a second. And number two, who moved my cheese. Because now, somebody asked me the other day, if you had to put something on a bumper sticker, what would it be? And it would be, please move my cheese. And that harkens back to an old story. Who Moved My Cheese is a metaphor. It was a whole book in the 80s or 90s. And basically, the premise is this. They're two mice. And every single day, they run through this maze, the same place, and they get cheese. One day, they get there, there's no cheese. And they say, huh, and they come back the next day, no cheese, and the next day. One mouse on like the third or fourth day says, there isn't going to be any cheese. I'm going to go out into the maze and find a new cheese. It probably won't be the same cheese, but I'm going to go out there and find some cheese. The other mouse said, no, fam, thanks. I'm just going to stick here. The cheese is coming back. So I now know, and I know because of having an adventure daughter, that failure is something that I actually really embrace and look forward to, because it means I get to reiterate. It means I get to innovate. It means that all those little gray cells in my head get to start spinning and creating something new.
Right.
So now my motto is, please move my cheese so I get to do something cool again.
Were there other big lessons that came about that surprised you in your journey? Every time I use the word journey, I wince a little bit because I hate watched The Bachelor with my daughter throughout the pandemic, and they get paid every time they say the word journey, I'm pretty sure, like the romantic journey. It's just ruined the word for me, but this is an actual physical journey, so I'm using it, and just like, I do not accept this rose. Okay, go
on. Well, I happily heard the word journey because it made me think of Journey, the band, and their iconic songs that seem so appropriate to my journey, frankly. Anyway, did I learn lessons on the journey? Of course. One of them is that I'm tired of being a deputy. I have been an A++ deputy all my life, and I am really excited about being my own boss and just relying on myself. And so that would probably be the biggest one. And then the second lesson was just a confirmation of something I already knew, which is that if you don't really listen to how others view things, including your own journey, you're missing out on so many opportunities. So segueing back to the question you asked me about the project, when I was doing a talk in Henrietta, Oklahoma, in October to a Lions Club, a woman said to me, so is this a book? And I was like, no, it's not a book. But that started a whole bunch of other people in the following couple of weeks saying, this is a book, Michelle. You don't understand. You're capturing history here. You're doing a contemporaneous oral history of Americans' lives during the pandemic. And it's a mosaic. And this has to be preserved for posterity. And it has to be a book. And I thought, huh. And so I reached out to the president of the Oral History Association and I said, is there anybody else's, this is me still in deputy mode, is there anybody else's project that I should just let them know that I'm doing this and they can like take mine up and make mine a part of theirs?
I want to make sure they take all the credit. Can you just let me know what number I should call to allow them to do that?
Right. Like I'm not practiced in this. This is, you know, and he responded in an hour and a half, which was amazing. And he said, number one, don't reach out to anybody else. This is your project. Nobody else is doing what you're doing. And by the way, what you've put together needs to be preserved. And this is a book.
And now it is a book coming out from UNC Press, summer 2022, right?
Fall 2022, probably. But yes, UNC Press. And I just got off the phone this morning with my marketing director and author publicist from UNC Press. And we're already starting to figure out how to let people know that it's coming.
So exciting. All right, we're going to talk more about what might or might not have been considered a midlife gap year, but first, a word from our sponsor.
Today's episode is sponsored by MusicVideosRanked.com. MusicVideosRanked.com has collected lists of the greatest music videos of all time. Check them out and give them a rating while you're at it. I love how you can search the site by decades. You can have an 80s minute if you need it with Once in a Lifetime, Where the Streets Have No Name, and of course, Take on Me. Or you can dial it up to the 2020s with the WAP music video that makes Madonna's Like a Virgin performance at the first ever MTV Awards seem positively quaint. Ah, progress. I was actually just over there watching the driver's license video because I didn't feel like I understood what that song was about. It's really good. It's a lovely little song. That's if you search on the 2020s. MusicVideosRanked.com is the perfect website to break you out of your social media scrolling. It's like comfort food for your soul to curate your own video channel and rate what you see. So get over to MusicVideosRanked.com and make your votes heard. That's MusicVideosRanked.com. Check it out.
And we're back with Michelle Fishburne talking about who we are now and her 12,000 miles in an RV around the United States during the pandemic. So you mentioned right before we took a break, you mentioned a story about a farmer, and I feel like we got to close the loop on that. You want to share that one?
Sure. So one of the things that has helped me not have fear of the unknown or what's next is an old adage I heard years ago. And it's about an old farmer who lives in a village, and all he has is his farm field and a horse and his son. And that's it. And he relied on his son to work the fields. Well, one day the horse runs away. And so the villagers come to him and say, "Old man, this is such terrible news. We're so sorry for you. This is so bad." And he said, "I don't know. I don't know that it's bad. It could be good." And they all kind of scratched their heads and they went away. Then a few days later, the horse comes back and he brings back with him several Mustangs. And the villagers come out and they say, "Oh, old man, this is such good news. You must admit this is good news." And he says, "I don't know. It might be bad." You know how this plays out. So the next time, the son gets on one of the Mustangs to try to tame it. And he falls off and he breaks his arm and can no longer plow the fields. And the old man's too old to do it. The villagers come out and they say, "Look, you have got to admit this time that this is really bad news. You guys are going to starve. We're so sorry." And he says, "I don't know. It could be good news." Last one. So then the next day, the army comes through the town and collects up all the able-bodied men to go fight in a war that none of them ever return from. But they don't take the young man with the broken arm. And that stays with me because in the times of my life that I've walked through fire, or even the ones when it's not fire, where something has just happened that I was disappointed in or made things more difficult, I just remembered the farmer and saying, "I don't know if this is good or bad." They say that there are two main emotions that people have, and everything follows from that: hope and fear. And so I think when things are good, we don't, you know, rustle up fear inside ourselves usually. But when things are bad and we're fearful, we need to tap into that hope.
Mm-hmm. So we've been talking about midlife gap year. I had Lisette Smith on the last episode talking about how to get one and take some planning. But we talked a lot about how it can be a reset during what will probably, for Gen X workers, will probably be a very long career, because none of us can afford to retire. The generation before us that was finished up with their work lives at 55, that seems like a real pipe dream. So we've been talking about, you know, making a midlife gap year a reset. And I wonder if you consider this journey a midlife gap year.
Okay, number one, I definitely consider this as a gap year. And you know, the fact that I was sending my own kid off to college, the youngest one at the time that this happened, I said to myself, "You know, Michelle, you've told both of your kids, go ahead and invest in yourself if you want and take a gap year to figure out what you really want to do next." So I had thought to myself, well, why are you saying to freeing them and saying, "Go do a gap year," if you're not willing to give that same kind of love and support to yourself? Michelle, consider this a gap year.
And so the book is coming soon, which is its own job. What else is next for you? How long will you stay on the road?
Oh, so this goes back to the reset question, which is that when I set out doing this, I just expected to go back, to be back employed full time in a sedentary, if you will, stationary position come January.
2021.
Mm-hmm. That was how I envisioned the rest of my life. Michelle in Washington doing PR for a international nonprofit,
mm-hmm,
and being happy as a clam. I now know that I would never be happy as a clam now doing that, because I've hit this reset button and I have found this latent passion for spending as many hours a day as I can listening to other people's stories. And that's what I want to do for the rest of my life. And, you know, I am a UNC grad. Charles Kuralt was a UNC grad. Charles Kuralt on the road. Hey, I would love to do that. There's also a person named Studs Terkel, who did NPR for many years. And he had a book called Working, and he just went all over the United States interviewing people about their jobs.
My mom had that book when I was a kid, and I used to sneak in her room and read it, because among the people he profiled was a prostitute. And I remember being like, "I'm 9 and I'm learning new words."
Oh, that is so funny.
So you could be, you could enlighten a whole new generation of young readers going, what? I didn't know that was, I've never heard of that before.
I don't see myself, just like my grandfather in 1938, when they really just didn't want to move into a house because they enjoyed living in their trailer. Mm-hmm. I would be delighted if the next 5 years of my life is me continuing to live in a motorhome, traveling all over the United States, and maybe I guess have to get on a plane every once in a while, so not the motorhome, all over the world, interviewing people about their lives. So this has been a complete reset for me because I have found what I truly, truly love to do, and that doesn't feel like work to me.
That's so awesome. Where can people find your stories and images and follow you on this trip?
The website is whowearenow.us. There are over 100 stories on there, complete with photos, so you can see what the person looks like, too. And right now, I'm not doing new stories a day because I'm focused on the book. My manuscript's due at the end of June, but I'll start posting new stories again in July. And my my Instagram is whowearenowusa, same with Facebook, whowearenowusa. And the behind-the-scenes Instagram account is Michelle Fishburne, which is just my name. And I'm headed to the Big Apple this weekend. I'm going to be doing some really interesting interviews when I'm up in New York City. I haven't been there since before the pandemic. And so the behind-the-scenes photos from New York should be interesting.
Awesome. And I'll put links to all of your social media in the show notes to make it easy to find you. I have one last question for you, but I have a pre-question. Here's the tea. I did not see Nomadland because my best friend said to me, Nancy, Nomadland makes Minari seem like an action flick. And I loved Minari, but I didn't know if I could go down another level of energy from Minari during a pandemic. So I just have to ask on behalf of everyone who has seen Nomadland, did you see it? And if so, are there parallels? Did you feel it was accurate? I mean, what was your response when you saw Nomadland?
I wasn't going to see it because I heard it was really depressing.
Yeah.
And then somebody said, no, Michelle, it kind of is a delightful celebration of the people who full-time on the road. And I think that is a bunch of baloney. I don't think it was a delightful celebration.
My friend gave me a very graphic description of the scene with the bucket and the gastrointestinal distress. And I'm like, yeah, I can't do that during a pandemic. I don't want to watch that scene.
No. I mean, I found it to be very, very depressing and not uplifting, frankly. But the thing that I thought was really interesting is part of it was shot in the Badlands National Park in South Dakota, and they were at one of my favorite campgrounds in the world there. So when I saw it, I thought, oh, so that made me smile. But that was about the only time I smiled during the movie.
Okay. And listeners, if you saw Nomadland and loved it, let us know. Let us know what you loved about it. One of my friends said, I'm scared to see it because I fear it is a glimpse into my retirement years. So there's people have a lot of thoughts about it. All right. So we always ask this final question. What one piece of advice do you have for people younger than you, or do you wish you could go back and tell yourself?
It's the piece of advice I just gave to myself recently. And it's kind of scary to do it, but it's what can also set you free in terms of figuring out what you really love and what you're really made of. When I was in my late 20s, I didn't know what I was made of, so I jumped out of a plane. I don't necessarily recommend that.
Michelle, let's get some facts here. With a parachute?
With a parachute. It was a tandem jump, but I had been apparently monkeying with the housing on my jacket before we went up to 12,005. And so when I hit the ripcord, it didn't open.
Oh my God, my palms are so sweaty. What'd they do?
My tandem partner hit the emergency chute.
And what did that teach you? I mean, why would you make that part of your advice to your younger self? What would you say? Stop monkeying with your jacket?
So I'm just saying, if you want to know what you're made of, if you want to know who you really are, then I would have to go back to the D.H. Lawrence quote, which I currently have on post-it notes on my motorhome. And this is the quote. You cannot swim for new horizons until you have courage to lose sight of the shore.
Bum, bum, bum. Yeah, that's a good one to have on post-it notes around us.
Because you know why? I keep, recently I talked to somebody and I said, I'm just going to go ahead and apply for this job. it would have been a sedentary sit, you know, down for the rest of your life job. And a friend of mine said to me, wait a minute, you're halfway up the mountain. You have a book that people are very, very interested in. You're being interviewed. You're in Good Housekeeping. You're on ABC TV. You have this path in front of you that seems so compelling. Why would you parachute back down to the base now? And then I thought, oh, she's so right.
Yeah. Yeah, it's interesting. I just interviewed for an editorial client of mine. I interviewed some guys who founded a really cool direct-to-consumer cookware company. I'm not going to give them an infomercial, but I'll tell you that after I interviewed them, I did go buy all their products. and that's what I do. As soon as I get an editorial paycheck, I'm like, I'm going to go spend it on the person who I just interviewed. But one of the things that they talked about was how important it was to not have a safety net when they started this business, because they knew it was three guys, and they knew that everybody was going to be completely devoted to the success of this new company because they had nothing else. And I thought a lot about that, is when you've got that, you have that safety net, it can be a trap too. It can be that thing that prevents you from getting on the road or swimming out from shore. So, you know, I think you have to be very conscious of not taking the road more traveled when it's right in front of you.
Wow. And what a nice segue into the journey of 12,000 miles.
Right. Oh, we're a good team. All right. Well, Michelle Fishburne, the new Charles Kuralt, best of luck. Don't crash and burn literally ever. Give your dog a big smooch for me. And we will look forward to keeping track of your journey on all your social media and looking for the book next fall.
Sounds great. Thanks, Nancy. Have a great day.
Talk about making lemonade out of lemons. I hope you were inspired by Michelle's story of turning what was definitely bad news in 2020, or at least according to that farmer's neighbors was bad news, into the good news of a book deal and a completely new avocation as an oral historian. I loved every part of her story, except the silent driving part. That sounds like torture to me. I don't know about that. Remember, next time it's our 100th episode. So ask me anything. Give me a break from formulating the interview outline. Save me some work. I don't want to have to think up the questions. You guys think of the questions. And remember, three people who send in questions will win prize packs. So email dj@midlifemixtape.com or drop your questions into social media on Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram @midlifemixtape. And if you're particularly interested in one of the prize packs I mentioned, remember there's the past guest book pack, there's the music book pack, and there is the thank you project book pack. Mention that when you ask your question too, and I'll try to make it happen. I'll pick the winners at random and announce them on June 22nd in the 100th episode. Now I need to research a signature cocktail. I got to make sure we have enough ice, and I got to start hanging streamers for June 22nd. I can't believe it. Thank you so much for listening, everyone, and have a wonderful week. I don't want to be this, don't want to be that. Don't want to give up, I want to give back. I want to be free by whatever means. Whatever you want from me, I want to be. Don't want to be this, don't want to be that. Don't want to give up, I want to give back. I want to be free by whatever means. Whatever you want from me, I want to be. I want to be. I want to be free by whatever means.